Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Tuning in today. So glad you joined us. I'm Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to Live the Promise and a very happy Monday to you. Although it's a little hot and muggy here in the Twin Cities, I hope you're having a good start to your week. Glad to have you listening today. You know, one thing that seems to be missing more and more in our world is civility and kindness. And my guest today is Barry Corey. He is the president of Biola University. And I suppose when you can't get a job in talk radio, you become president of a university. I think that's what happens. So he's probably jealous talking to me today, I'm guessing. What do you think, Matt?
Maybe.
You're not helpful. But he's written a book called Love, Kindness, and we're going to try to rediscover the power of a forgotten Christian virtue. It seems to me that when you read things on the internet and then you have an opportunity to post things after the article, you see all this, these venomous, hateful, mean-spirited comments that it seems that we've become a nation of cowards that sit behind our computers and we make these horribly caustic statements. And I think that bleeds into our regular, everyday, face-to-face life. And we're having less of it because we're looking more at screens, and we're going to talk about that even in the second hour today. But it seems to me that we've lost our ability to be nice, and then when we're not nice, we end up getting in arguments, and that doesn't represent Christ as we try to share it with others, and it causes all kinds of problems. But my guest today is Dr. Barry Corey, and he is, in fact, the president of Biola University and has been since 2007. He previously served as the vice president for education at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. He received his BA in English and Biblical Studies and his master's degree in American Studies and a PhD in education from Boston College. So, Barry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be on your show and nice to meet you by phone.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's actually Susie's show. And I'm just trying not to alienate her listeners. That's my goal for the week, is not to make her listeners.
I'll try to help you out.
Yeah, I feel like the substitute teacher. You know, you used to have those teachers, and they'd come in, and you go, "Oh, I'd probably just play a movie or something."
Yeah, day off.
Exactly.
But not with Bill.
Not with me. I'm going to work harder than I've ever worked. All right, Barry, I want to start off with a verse from you. But before we start with that, I got to give you one, because this is one I memorized 35 years ago, and it's Ephesians 4:32, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another, just as Christ has forgiven you. And I thought, be kind and compassionate, and that is something that's sorely missing, isn't it?
It is sorely missing, and, you know, it's there when it's easy to be there. I mean, it's easy for me to be kind to the barista at the coffee shop when she gets my latte right. You know, it's easy to be kind to people in my family when there's harmony. But when Paul says that, be kind and compassionate, he follows it by forgiving. In other words, there's something that has come between you, and it's a lot harder when you have to express kindness to someone that you might have had a conflict with. It's a lot harder when there's not harmony in your family. Right? There's a lot harder when you have to be kind to someone whose worldview is diametrically different than your own. That's the true test of kindness. So that's a great verse that you brought up. I should have used that one more frequently in the book, but I didn't.
Yep. Okay, how about one from you now? How about a verse from you?
All right, let's go to Micah 6:8, which is the very common verse where prophet says he has showed you, O follower of God, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to actually means to love kindness, which is the name of the book, and to walk humbly with your God. And love kindness is not just, we don't just do kindness in a Nike-esque kind of way. We love kindness. In other words, that embodies who we are. And kindness, as you know, is a fruit of the Spirit, never listed as a gift of the Spirit. So it's not like we can opt out of kindness and say, well, that's somebody else has that gift, that's not mine. So the followers of God, that Micah 6:8 passage, are called to love kindness. That means we embody it. That means, like love, it's the verb and not the noun. It's something that we will ourselves to do. And my point in the book, and I tell the point through a lot of stories where I've observed the power of kindness in some pretty radical ways, that we have far underestimated the revolutionary impact that kindness can have in the life of a follower of Jesus. It's not just that it's going to make us better husbands and better moms and better neighbors, but it's going to make us kind of more radical disciples. And it's a way of living that sometimes we equate with niceness. And one of my points is that kindness and niceness are not at all the same things. We need to stop telling our children to be nice and start telling them to be kind and tell them the difference. Kindness is what I call a life with a firm center and soft edges. And that's what's needed more than ever before. And niceness is soft edges and a spongy center and, you know, everybody's okay, you do your own thing. But there's a deep sense of conviction that kindness calls us to. And when it's done the Jesus way, you know, look out world, it has the ability to reconcile families and build bridges where there have been walls and bring healing to communities and to families. You can reconcile nations. Kindness is much more powerful than we give it credit for.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I also have to say it's exciting to be talking to a president of a university, because the only time I would ever talk to a president of a university is usually when I was in trouble.
So yeah,
this is a perk
this
for me.
This is not your trouble day.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well.
Good. So
yeah.
Let's back up a little bit.
Sometimes the only time I talk to a radio talk show host is when I'm in trouble, too, or something's going on.
Yeah,
so.
I get it. It works both ways, doesn't it? Yeah, exactly.
It does.
Yeah, tell our listeners a little bit about your own faith journey. It doesn't have to go too long, but just give us a little understanding of how you got came to faith.
Yeah, this is part of the story of kindness. I was raised in a pastor's home as a son of a preacher, and in Boston, which was a kind of a part of the world where the kind of vibrant Christianity isn't as ubiquitous as it would be in other parts of the country. But my father had this profound sense of kindness in his own life, and I can talk about that later, because that was one of the most impactful ways in which I've discovered what kindness can really do. But I grew up in a family where we were deeply loved, and my parents had a great ability to love those who were down and out and marginalized, and I saw that firsthand and how it changed lives. And at some point I had to make my faith my own, and went off to college and began to intellectually understand that God is the author of all truth, and it is not a compartmentalized faith that I live, and it's much broader than that, that God's truth affects everything that we do. And then went on to graduate school, and in the middle of my 20s had this crisis of normalcy where everything was good in my life, and I thought, what if some of the crutches were kicked out? How strong is my faith? And at that point I made a decision I was going to move and do a year of research in Bangladesh. I worked with Muslims and Hindus, and pretty much lived among the rural poor for a year studying educational systems there. And a lot happened that year to kind of refine my faith and see the love of Christ, how it can work through me in ways that I had never imagined before. And then came back from that year, married a wonderful person that I dated for 4 years and known for 10. And now we have three children, young adults that are the joy of our life, and I've been out here in California doing this thing at Biouniversity since moving here from Boston 10 years ago. Bam, that's it.
I like it. I stayed interested the whole time too. which is so not me, just so you know.
Well, I don't know what your attention...
Very short attention span, Barry. Very short.
Be yeah. like, so, well.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about you losing your father. Of course, that can always have such a deep impact on men, but in particularly, let's talk about how that affected you.
Yeah, so here's where it comes down to the marrow of the book. And this is one of the opening chapters of the day my father was dying of a disease he had for a long time, this prostate cancer that kind of got out of control and ravaged his body. And watching him in his final days be as profoundly kind as he was when he was healthy. And it brought me back to that year that I was just talking about when I lived in Bangladesh, and I was looking at the poverty, the natural disasters, the disease, the illiteracy, the corrupt systems, everything. And I was saying, like, God, do you really see what's going on here? And I started to go through a bit of a cynical period in my life with so many people and the little that I could do. And it was at that time that my father came through for just a few days. He was in India and came up to visit me and then moved on. And then this one particular morning, the morning I'll never forget, we were walking through the neighborhood and dodging rickshaws and, you know, walking by dumpsters where people were foraging for food. And my father said, he said, there's a passage in the book of Matthew, chapter 10, where Jesus says to his disciples, right after he does the thing about pick up your cross and follow me, he says, whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. And then my father said to me, I don't really fully understand what Jesus meant, but I do know this, that I have to make myself receivable to anyone that God places in my path, regardless. For if they don't receive me, how will they receive the grace of God, the love of Christ? And my father had done some really weird things when I was a kid. He would hug the Islamic gas station attendant and pray for the Armenian cobbler over the, you know, the counter, or one point he held the Jewish furniture merchant's face in his hand and he said, Reuben, I love you. And those are very awkward moments for me to watch my father do that as a child. And at that point, when I was an adult hearing my father say that thing about receivable, I realized that my father wasn't being weird. He was just making himself receivable. And I thought, that's the calling that Christ has on our life. And that's what's hard for me because, you know, to make yourself receivable, I also want to be received, and sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're rejected. Sometimes people walk away or give you the fist or the finger or whatever it might be. And yet I've watched my father, even those times he was rejected, he still had this profound ability to love people and to open up the grace of God into their lives. And so that was what I was reflecting on that January night in 1998 when I sat by his bedside and heard his breathing soften and soften until he finally died.
That is so sweet and so tender, what you just shared. I was almost choking up there a little bit. It was very, very sweet. Barry, we're going to take a little break. I have lots of questions for you when we come back, many which I'm going to make up during the break. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We'll take a little break. Be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson as she is on a very well-deserved week of rest and vacation, which is a perfect thing to do in the middle of summer. Just get some time away, spend it with family, have some naps, have some time just to kind of let down. She's doing that this week. I'm talking to Barry Corey. He is the president of Biola University in Southern California, and he's written a book called Love, Kindness. And we're talking about finding ways to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God, and kind of rediscover that verse from Micah 6:8. And right now, Barry, I want to ask you about the frustration that I know many have who are representing the gospel, but instead of being kind, they're often being pretty harsh and picking fights with people who are hostile to their view. So, why do Christians start with this position, this almost this unkind position?
Well, I don't know who to blame or what to blame, but I think it's the easy way. It's a lot easier to rant from across the street or on a blog or on a radio show, not yours, somebody else's.
Thank you.
Than it is to sit down and actually have a conversation and talk to people and be reasonable. So that, and I think we're also mimicking the way in which, you know, academia can be this way, the media can be this way, politics can certainly be this way. I had an article in an op-ed in the Washington Post a few months ago titled "The Incredible Shrill of This Election Season," which just I've never seen a political season more outrageous. And that outrageous, I mean like the outrage, the heat, the shrill, you know, candidates, you know, putting on their red and blue ties and then wrapping themselves in razor wire and then come to the podium. It's just been mind-boggling that it has to be that way. And as I think about that, though, I think, okay, maybe that is politics, but that's not the gospel. Someone recently told me that we never lead our enemies towards following Christ, only our friends. And so, you know, the logic is, and then that we didn't make our enemies our friends. And I think so many of the well-mounted arguments in the world of what we need to stand for, when I talk about firm center and soft edges, firm center means we have deep conviction. But if we have firm centers and then hard edges, and I think that there was some of that that's happened in the past with the Christians, that we stand for what we believe and we're going to fight and everyone's going to be on the other side and we're going to be combatants and we're going to yell and shake our fist and rattle our sabers and have some swagger. I'm not really sure that it helps people on the other side listen. But I do think if we tone down the volume a little bit and begin with grace without giving up on our truth, I do think that we have a far better chance of being listened to. So, you know, I hope Christians, you know, it begins with me because I'm like, I can be like, it's easier for me to like shout an opinion out about somebody. But if we could focus less on battling our enemies than on befriending them,
mm-hmm.
And if we stop thinking that it's always us against them, we're not going to get very far. We can't influence people who are, you know, always seen as our combatants. But if we're always unkind to those that we disagree with, how will they ever see in us this like profound, reconciling, unmerited, sin-forgiving love of Christ? That's the whole idea of when my father said to me that Matthew 10:40 verse in the 10:40 window, I might add, whoever receives you receives me. Whoever receives me receives the one. And that means we work hard on getting along and we work hard on being kind. And as a dear friend has reminded me recently, you don't have to see eye to eye to work shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to ask a little bit about the hard edges that sometimes people have. And is it some of it because they feel a little insecure or a little self-preservation because they feel like they're being attacked? And so the hard edges come out. Is that fair?
Yep, I think it is fair. This isn't in the book, but I've thought about it since then that, you know, when you talk about kindness and you ask somebody, like, what's the opposite of kindness? And people probably say, well, it's meanness. And the opposite of kind is to be mean. But I actually don't think that's true. I actually think that the opposite of kindness is fear. And we're afraid of the president, we're afraid of the Supreme Court, we're afraid of the atheist, the Muslim, the immigrant, the gay person, whatever it might be. And because of our fear, we get very defensive and we want to build protections and we want to knock that person or group down in order to protect ourselves a little bit from that which we're fearing. And I just think that, you know, if perfect love does cast out all fear, which the Bible says it does, so I have to believe it's true. And if fear is an idol, which I also think that it is as well, because fear means we're putting something else in the way of God in our lives, and we're replacing our trust in Him with something else. Then I think if we just let go of the fear, I think we're going to naturally be kinder because we have nothing to lose. And let me add this, Bill, if you don't mind. One of the reasons why we are kind is because we want people to be kind back to us. And so, you know, sometimes we think, well, of course I want to be kind, because if I'm going to be kind, I'm going to be thanked. And kindness is not about being thanked. Kindness is about being obedient. And there's a big difference between the two, because sometimes our gestures of kindness are not going to be appreciated. Sometimes people are going to walk away. Sometimes people are going to, you know, put it back in our face, and then we'll say, okay, you know, I tried, and I'm not going to be kind anymore to that person because they've rejected my kindness. But that gets again back to that verse in Matthew 10:40, where Jesus says, "Whoever receives you receives me. Whoever receives me receives the one who sent me." That we have to make ourselves receivable. Jesus said, never said we're going to be received. We just said we have to make ourselves receivable. And sometimes our kindness is going to be rejected, and so be it. And we have nothing to lose. I mean, if you're free in being kind, and it's not about your own ego and your own, as you said, insecurity, then your kindness, if it's rejected, then that's okay. You're being obedient. You're not doing that to be thanked.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing a long time ago that if you wanted to be a person of influence, you had to be a person willing to be influenced. And I always thought about
that.
That's
a great line.
Yeah, and then I thought, well, how does that apply to being receivable, like you talk about? If you want to be a person that's received, I don't know if I can use the same formula right now. You have to be a person willing to be receivable. I don't know. But there's something that's so key to this that I'm having a hard time understanding still, which I know you're doing a great job of explaining it. But you're president of a university, and I did like 13 years of junior college, so I'm struggling here a little bit.
All right, let me try to explain it this way, if I can jump in.
Okay,
unless
no, please.
You have something else you want
to
say.
No, please, go ahead. Rescue me.
All right, let's talk about, I think, one of the greatest gestures of kindness is listening. And I think we are not always good listeners because we're so busy trying to defend our position that we listen, unfortunately, while waiting to respond rather than listening while wanting to learn. And if you think about that for a moment, I mean, sometimes we're in a conversation with someone that we disagree with profoundly on an issue, and that person is talking to us about their point. We're not even listening to them. We're just kind of we're creating our next point that we're going to, you know, use as a rebuttal to, you know, something they might have said earlier. And I think that's not the Jesus way, who is a very good listener. It doesn't mean by listening to someone whose point of view might be different than yours that you're going soft on your faith. But I think what you said, Bill, a minute ago, if you want to be an influencer, you need to be willing to be influenced. And I think that's the whole idea of being kindness, is respecting somebody else enough to be able to listen to their point of view and to dignify them by saying, I care about what you think. And we might learn something along the way. If we think we've got it all figured out, then I think we're in for a rude surprise that we're not going to be as influential as we think.
Yeah,
life is far more opened up than buttoned up.
We don't listen to each other. We just carry on parallel monologues, it seems. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Barry Corey on his book Love Kindness. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for the Vacationing Susie Larson. I'll be right back.
Do you ever wish?
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. I'm talking to Barry Corey today. He's written a book called Love Kindness, and we are talking about how we have to find that place in our lives where we're consistently receivable, where we can receive and be in a position to give kindness. Barry, did I say that right? I think I butchered that.
No, you got it. Yeah, this is good. I mean, yeah. Again,
I always open my mouth before I think. That's the problem with this job.
You know what? This is the big deal about kindness, which makes it so radical, is that I think kindness can really rock somebody's world when they're not expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your kindness will be received. Sometimes your kindness will be rejected. but your kindness will never be forgotten. Kindness has this haunting power to linger with somebody for a very long time. So for your listeners, even when you are kind to your neighbor or your coworker and they kind of rebuff you or they don't seem to appreciate what you've done, it's going to be there. It's like a seed that's planted in soil, and at some point it's going to sprout, even though it might take a very long time. That's why I think kindness is the way in which we can reconcile relationships. And kindness is often happens when no one is looking. We have I went for a run in our little city of Fullerton some time ago, and I was going down the sidewalk, and I looked ahead of me, and there was a guy with long, straggly hair down by his shoulders. And we have transient homeless people in our city, so I kind of kept my head down and ran right by the guy because I didn't carry any money when I run, and I didn't want him to hit me up for cash. And when I went by him, I heard him say, "Hey, Barry, is that you?" And I stopped, and I looked up, and this guy with jeans and a flannel shirt and hair down past his shoulders was one of our philosophy professors at Biola University. And I said, "Oh, you know, Greg, I'm kind of surprised to see you here." And he was with another friend, and they had a McDonald's bag. And I said, "What are you doing?" And he didn't want to tell me. And finally, I pulled it out of him that he said, "Okay, here's what I do. My friend Dave and I, we go to McDonald's early in the morning. We buy a bag full of Egg McMuffins, and we find homeless people, and we have breakfast with them. Not we give them sandwiches, but we break bread with them. We eat with them. We share a meal together in this very incarnational Jesus way." And here's a well-known thought leader in the Christian world who's written books and published and, you know, gave presentations and lectures before many. And he gets up early in the morning when no one's looking, and he goes and has breakfast with homeless people. This is kindness is what we do when no one is looking. But it's that Matthew 25 deal when Jesus says, you know, you do it to the least, you're doing it to me. And you live that way of kindness. That's what we're called to do. And I think as Christians, we think, oh, kindness, that's for like grandmothers and Boy Scouts, when actually kindness is for leaders. And we can be much more effective leaders when we're kind. And sometimes that's counterintuitive. We think, oh, we got to be harsh and we got to be dictatorial and mean when if we could just live, again, with a life with firm centers, this is what I believe in, soft edges. Bible says Jesus came full of grace, that's soft edges, and full of truth, firm center, not half of each. And that's what the radical call of kindness leads us to, is very effective lives of influence because we've lived that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when I look at what's going on in society and with cultural and the diversity that goes on, I know you've got an interesting story in chapter 4 about what went on. But even when I'm thinking about ways to build bridges to people, like perhaps in the Muslim community, as I'm passing them in the street, and it seems that as hard as I try, I can't even seem to get any eye contact of any kind. There's like, I don't know if there's some cultural thing where, you know, you don't want to make eye contact, or I don't even know, but I mean, this is me just being ignorant, or maybe I'm just so hideous that no one wants to look at me and talk to me. I don't know, but I'm just saying, it's like it's hard to sometimes be kind when you want to be, and you don't know how to go about it.
Right. You know, that's true. I have two chapters in the book on how do we live profound lives of kindness in the LGBT conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, life with firm center and soft edges. What does that look like? And I share some very personal stories, both of, you know, how my overtures have been accepted and I've been in good conversations, and where they haven't been that way. So when you talk about the Muslim walking down the street and not getting eye contact, you know, it makes me wonder, like, where is there an opportunity with someone in the neighborhood or your children's school, or where you can just say, "Hey, you know what? Can do you mind if we share a meal together, have a cup of coffee?" And it's easy for us to share a meal in our home with those who mirror our own social, economic, family, cultural, ethnic background. We like to be around people like us, but I actually think the scriptures are very clear that we're called to bring people literally to our kitchen table or our dining room table whose stories are very different than ours. And this is the way in which both in the Old and New Testaments, the people of God that were like really following him closely, they opened up their tables. I mean, Nehemiah in the book of Ruth, and certainly, you know, in Jesus' time, you know, this is, he'd go and break bread with people in their homes that were not like him. And I think that that is what we are called to do. If John's revelation in the final book is true, that at one point there's going to be this great supper and people from every tongue and tribe and nation are going to be there, then we should reverse engineer that and say, what does that look like today for us? Are we opening up our table? So that gets back to, you know, having conversations with those whose stories are different than ours and maybe whose worldview is different than ours, whose lifestyle is maybe something that we wouldn't necessarily approve of. Again, rather than pounding our fist on the pulpit, it's better to open up your, you know, your macaroni and cheese at your house and say, hey, let's have a meal together. I think that's one of the things that kindness calls us to, which is harder than ranting. It's always harder to relate than to rant, but Jesus calls us to relate. So maybe that's a long answer to your question about maybe not so much the person on the street, but what about the person in our children's school or in our neighborhood or in our workplace whose story is very different than ours? Say, hey, I like, and respect them and dignify them enough to know, say, hey, tell me a little bit about, you know, your life, the music that you listen to, the food you eat, the culture you're from, the kind of worship experience that you have. And again, giving people the dignity of listening to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I can feign interest for that long. You know, that's part of the problem is you have to genuinely be interested, don't you?
You do. And I think that that is something that for some people it's easy and mm-hmm. for other people it's a lot of work. And
yeah.
for me and for Bill Arnold, it's probably a lot of work. But it's, again, kindness is not a random act. It's a radical life.
No, I completely agree with you. So let's talk a little bit about the being present and being all in for hurting people who need your presence. And you talk about multitasking is the curse of presence. Speak to that, if you would.
Well, you should ask my wife.
Because,
okay. You know.
Get her on.
I've got the computer open. I'm fiddling with stuff in the house. She's talking, and I'm not all in. And that is a disease that I have, is that I feel like I'm such a doer, a type A personality that for me to stop and slow down and actually enter into someone's life, especially into someone's pain, without being distracted, I mean, I just feel like, well, that's not really a good use of my time. I could be doing several things at once. But truly that is, as I say in the book, the curse of kindness is multitasking, that we're not all in. I share the story even of simple things, like when I took a choir to Korea and we happened to be there right around the time that terrible ferry tragedy happened and 300 high school students basically were entombed in that ferry as the ferry sunk and they lost their lives. And we went to the place where their mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters were waiting for them and couldn't speak the language, but we could, you know, share a song with them. The one song that the choir learned ahead of time before this ferry incident happened was the 23rd Psalm, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you are with me." And sometimes we resort to cliches and happy talk when we really need to be present in someone's pain, but just by being there and maybe not saying anything or just lamenting with them. And I think that is something that kindness calls us to, and we can't do that if we're distracted with doing a lot of other things.
Mm-hmm. That's really, you know, I know one of my walkaways from today's conversation with you, Barry, is kindness is never forgotten. That's really going to stick
it's
with
not.
Me. Yeah. And I love that you're a type A. You're a full type A, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm all in.
You're the kind of guy that would try to pass me inside the car wash, wouldn't you?
That's good. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
Well, I wrote the book for me. I mean, I was the one who was struggling with this whole issue. So, I mean, you can read it, and basically you're eavesdropping on my life. And in the book, and I won't talk too much about it, but I get very personal about my own failures as well, because I think kindness, which I ended the last section by saying, is much more the opened-up life than the buttoned-up life. I take 9 freshmen every year on this camping trip up to Yosemite, and I've done this with a childhood friend for 9 years since I've been president of Biola, and we talk about life together, the challenges and the obstacles and the dreams and aspirations, and I open up with them, and I think that they respect leadership more when they feel like the leadership that they're looking at is real, and you talk about the lessons you've learned through your own failures, not just, you know, five steps of leadership or seven successful this or that, and they just want to know that you're living the journey and you've learned about life through failures and successes. And I try to be maybe not transparent, that means they would see everything, but at least translucent so they could see enough through me that they realize that, you know, this guy is real. And I think that is part of the even the journey with those that we might oppose our worldviews with, like, what, hey, here's some things that I don't fully understand about you, and here's some of the struggles that I've had and challenges. And when you can be honest with someone about your own stuff, it just opens the door for them to trust you more, not to trust you less.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about hypocrisy, because that seems to be oftentimes in the way of spoiling things. People see hypocrisy and they go, well, you call yourself a Christian, or you think you're such a kind person, but how does that get in the way?
Yeah, so I share a story in the book about being on a plane from Chicago to LaGuardia with an Orthodox Jewish man sitting next to me, and I watched how he wasn't following the FAA rules at certain points in the flight, and yet he got up to pray very religiously there on the plane with his yarmulke and phylacteries and everything else. And we got in a long conversation about, I said, well, how could he justify the difference between, you know, obeying religious rules but not aviation rules? And he got a little defensive, but by the time we landed, I realized, you know, that's, I am the religious guy. I am the one who is, people are watching me, and I'm religious because of the Bible I carry, or the prayer in a restaurant over my meal, or the title that I have at a Christian institution, or my bumper sticker, whatever it might be. That, am I consistently walking a life of openness about who I am as a follower of Jesus, and not, you know, putting on one disguise in one context and then doing something else in another? Because I think hypocrisy is a profoundly unkind way of living, and it turns people off. And it doesn't mean we have to have our act together, but it does mean we have to be open about our own mistakes and acknowledge the fact that, you know what, you know, we've fumbled and blown it, and we're going to try to be forgiven and get back up again. I think that is a dimension of kindness, of not trying to appear to be hyper religious in how we live out our life, but just be really honest about our ups and downs. And, you know, if that guy on the plane had said, you know what, you're right, I made a mistake, instead of getting defensive, but I get defensive as well. So I think hypocrisy is really a scourge of kindness in so many ways, maybe more than anything else. I mean, that's what Jesus says, like, woe to you, you want your name yelled out in the synagogue. And, you know, I'm like that. I like to hear my name called out from the platform that Barry Cordy is here, and I go, yeah, here I am. But that's my own pride, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't impress anybody but me, and that doesn't last long as soon as I go home.
Right. So is pride an enemy of kindness, or is pride just an enemy of everything?
Well, I think pride's an enemy of everything, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. All right, Barry, we're going to take a little break. If you have a question for Barry Cordy, you want to give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. We've got a couple copies of his book. You can give us a ring. You might be one of the lucky ones to get it. So the book is called Love Kindness, and we're going to take a little break and be right back. You're listening to Live the Promise. Thanks for listening today. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. We'll be right back. Promise. We're talking to Barry Cordy today. He's written a book called Love Kindness. And if you want to get in on possibly getting winning a copy of the book, you can email Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, at myfaithradio.com, and you'll get in the pool to possibly win one of these books. Barry, let's talk a little bit about permeable edges. I think you kind of blew by that in the beginning, and I want to backtrack on that and make sure I understand. Because when we're in conversations and we're with people who expect us to be intolerant, they're looking for that gotcha moment. Oh, you're one of those people. And all of a sudden, we're already starting behind the eight ball. So talk about the permeable edges.
All right. So back to the idea of firm center, soft edges. This is a very oversimplified way of trying to get the point across about what kindness is. I mean, meanness is firm center, hard edges, and niceness is soft edges and soft center. But kindness, this biblical virtue that is all through Scripture, Old Testament, New Testament, the words of Jesus, the words of Paul, is this life of, you know what, this is my core beliefs, and I'm not leading with defensiveness about them. I'm leading with a lot of grace. And permeable edges sometimes means like when you come across somebody else, that your edges are going to bump up against theirs, and they're going to overlap, and there might be ways in which you have common ground and shared interests, even though your worldview might be different than theirs. So I think it allows yourself to be much more in community with those who might be have a completely different perspective on social issues or lifestyle. And we have to allow a certain amount of permeability to engage in their life. And we can do that in a way without compromising our own sense of what is right and what is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a guy who's written a book on love and kindness, and so you've got a lot of, a lot of people looking at you going, ooh, I wonder if this Barry guy's going to be nice. I wonder if he's going to be kind. I mean, has there been occasions where your kindness has been rejected, and how did that make you feel?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. Mm-hmm. And it made me feel that my ego kind of reared its ugly head, and I felt like, okay, I'm not gonna try that again. But as I think as you inhale the Holy Spirit, I think you exhale kindness more. And I've just got a lot of rough edges that God's working on my life on, and one of them is my own sense of pride. Because when kindness is rejected, I take that as a personal affront. So, but I also there's a story in there actually of someone who said some very unkind things about me in a blog after I gave this talk at Biola about human sexuality, and my immediate response was, well, I can outflank him by blogging back and saying something to put him in his place and correct his misconceptions, but instead, I felt like, you know what, I should probably reach out to him. So there's a very fascinating email exchange that I have with this blogger's permission in Chapter 5 of the book that is my own initiative to say, you know what, John, why don't we sit down and have a cup of coffee or lunch together, and let's talk through the differences that we have. And I'd rather do that than, you know, shout at you from the in cyberspace somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, I'd like to do it. But by the time, you know, back and forth emails over the course of several weeks, he finally said, you know what, really not ready to even have that conversation yet. And I just have to trust God that is an invitation that is deferred and not rejected, that one day John will say, yeah, I'm ready for that coffee. And so sometimes our kind overtures won't be accepted right away, and we just need to be patient and wait. But that gets back again to the whole point. We are called to make ourselves receivable. Even if we aren't received, we're supposed to be kind out of obedience, not just to be thanked. And that is the radical dimension of kindness, that if we can live much more freely if our overtures of kindness are not always waiting for a thank you. I mean, even there's been research on that, which is amazing. The Atlantic Magazine says kindness makes your marriage better. Research in Time Magazine, it makes you healthier. University of Michigan helps kindness makes you live longer. Cambridge University, kindness is contagious, that it encourages others to live the same way. There are two major studies that says kindness actually leads to happiness. And I think it's because you live kindness without feeling like I'm only being kind to get something back. Kindness has to be that selfless, grace-filled, Christ-like overture of just, you know, I'm going to be kind regardless of how I'm responded to. And that's such a freeing way. No wonder marriages are better and people are happier and living longer and healthier. Mm-hmm. Kindness leads to that.
Yeah. Barry, could you give some kind of practical yet specific ways that we can be kind?
Yeah, I think I look people in the eye.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Look people in the eye when we're talking to them, asking them their name and remember it. When you see them next time, that you care enough about their name to actually like say their name in your head and remember it next time you see them. I think what I said earlier that hospitality is one of the greatest forms of kindness, and it's an art that I think many of us are losing, and we're not hospitable like Scriptures call us to be, and and opening up our table, or as simple as it might be. I've been invited to eat at people's homes that are incredibly poor in different parts of the world, and I was just so blessed just to be offered to have a chance to eat a meal at their table. You know, these are some simple ways in which we can live out kindness, listening to someone, even though we might feel impatient, coming along someone who's deeply in pain and not try to give them some kind of platitudes about, you know, how, you know, life is going to get so much better, but just enter into their pain and lament with them. These are profound acts of kindness that may not show up on our trophy shelf, but they will. God's going to remember those.
Mm-hmm. I think you made a lot of people panic when you said remember people's names, because I think when you're meeting someone, it seems that you're more interested in having them hear your name than you are actually hearing their name and remembering it.
That's true, Steve.
Yeah. You see?
That's a joke.
I got it right away. My producer didn't. He's giving me that blank stare like, he just called you Steve, man. What's happened?
So, Aaron, I'm just messing with you.
Oh, yeah, he's okay. In a complete panic. He feels sorry for me. Anyway, we just have a couple minutes left. So conviction without courage goes nowhere. Courage without conviction goes anywhere. Conviction with courage goes somewhere. The heavy thought
we're
wrapping things up.
Yeah, Malfoy just said, firm center conviction, what do I believe in? And then to walk out in that courageous faith of kindness. So if we have a deep sense of conviction but we don't act on it, we're not going to go anywhere. If we have all kinds of niceness surrounding us but no sense of conviction, then that's going to go anywhere. But if you want to go somewhere, really to make a difference in this world, then you need a life of profound conviction, what you believe, and courageous love of how you live out that belief. Again, leading with soft edges and not with a firm center. You add me, begin with a verse, I'll end with a verse. Romans 2:4, after this part about how the judgment of Christians against Christians and others goes nowhere, it says that kindness leads to repentance.
Mm.
Not judgment, not meanness, but God's kindness leads to repentance. And so I think that is one of the great ways in which we live out the gospel and see lives change, is to live a life of profound kindness. So that's what I was trying to get at in the 238 pages of Love Kindness, the book I wrote.
That's awesome. So we can encourage people tonight to try to do one small act of kindness, and then just to leave it there and not think about yourself after you do it. I'll sometimes hear footsteps behind me as I'm entering the post office or something, and I'll wait and I'll hold the door, and sometimes people will walk by me like I'm the doorman. They don't say thank you, and all of a sudden I feel offended.
Right.
So, I mean, you really have to, when you do an act of kindness, just let it go. Just let it be what it is.
Yeah.
And I know there's people out there, Barry, that I know are feeling that they've been rejected, or that no one's been nice to them for a long time, or have not shown them kindness. Would you close in a word of prayer for them?
Yeah, Lord, as we think about that right now, we remember that the kindest act in human history was when you died on the cross for us. You didn't do that so that we would receive you. You did that so you would be receivable, and that's what your grace did. And so I pray for those who are listening right now who have not maybe felt that they have been appreciated and loved, and may they feel the profound love of Christ right now. And I pray that even miraculously that there will be people in their lives that will, out of the love of Christ that they have, reach out in ways that will lift them up and not tear them down. So I pray your blessing upon those who are listening today. May they truly feel the kind-hearted love of Christ in their spirit right now, and may they go out and do likewise.
Barry, I now release you to go back to being president of Biola University.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, great having you on the show.
Program.
We've been talking to Barry Corey, his book, Love Kindness. Thanks for listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson. Hour two is coming up. We're going to talk to Tricia McCary-Rose. She's written a book called The Wired Soul, Finding Spiritual Balance in a Hyper-Connected Age. We'll be right back.